And welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Manjeet Naik to the podcast and Sarah Lukens to the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us. And what we're here to talk today about is overcoming data quality issues with KPIs. But before we dive into that, I want to do a brief introduction, get to know you guys a little. So, Manjeet, you are a engineer turned project manager. You have a degree in electrical engineering and extensive experience as a controls engineer and a calibration and reliability consultant. It looks like here you've done a tremendous amount of work around lifecycle costing, RCM, PMO, all those things that we do on a regular basis in our industry. And Sarah, you are a data scientist. You develop data-driven analytics to support industrial software applications, and you've been working for the past 5 years in the maintenance and reliability space. Although very brief, what else can you two tell us about yourselves?
Yeah, so I mean, I have spent about a decade working in the maintenance and reliability world. And like you said, you know, I originally come from the world of control systems, and I joined this company, Meridium, which used to be a leader in APM, asset performance management, before it was acquired by GE. So we moved into GE after the acquisition. And I've had a great amount of experience working with a lot of customers, helping them on their journey of APM, asset performance management, and improving their reliability, and also the journey for data quality improvement. So I've been very lucky serving a lot of different customers in the oil and gas industries, as well as the chemicals and the power generation world.
All right, excellent.
Yeah, and I've been working with Manjeet for the past 5 years. I come from an academic math background, working in computational data-driven models, but for different applications, not industrial. And started working with Manjeet on CMMS data, going, okay, what can we do to get value? How can customers can get value with this data? Go. And it's been a journey ever since.
All right. Excellent. Now, like I mentioned, we're here to talk about, you know, overcoming data quality issues with KPIs. So let's start at the beginning. What is a KPI?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a KPI, or a key performance indicator, is basically a measure of a particular aspect of performance. And more specifically for our discussion here, it's a measure of the performance of an asset in a process or a manufacturing plant. Right? And metrics can be very high level. Like, there are some high level metrics like OEE, which is a very common one, or overall equipment effectiveness. That's what it stands for. Or, you know, it can be very granular and detailed, like corrective count or reactive count. You know, that's the amount of repairs I have, or the amount of emergency type failures I have in my plant. Also, you can have like leading metrics, which give you an idea of what is going to happen in the future. So for example, like PM compliance. So if I meet my PM schedule, then it's likely that my repairs would probably go down, right? Because I'm going to find these problems ahead of time. So I can like kind of be more proactive in fixing problems. Or you could have lagging indicators like, you know, reactive work count, which is like something that has already happened and you're kind of analyzing after the fact and trying to understand, you know, how you can improve in the future. So I guess you need a good mix of all of these different kinds of KPIs to understand how your assets are performing and to get an accurate picture of, you know, the reality in the field.
All right, excellent. So these are indicators of what's actually going on in the field. Now, you know, there's a lot of issues with KPIs, inconsistent measurement, inconsistent data. There's a lot of issues that organizations experience with KPIs. Now, that being said, why is it so important that we have good quality data coming in to our systems to calculate these? And what is quality data? Is it complete? Is it data that's taken at a certain interval of time?
Ooh, can I get the data quality? What is data quality question?
Please do.
So data quality, I think it's formally defined in several places as data that is, quote, fit for a purpose. But what does that actually mean? To me, it means it's data that's sufficiently good to do what you're trying to do with it. So there's no point in measuring data quality if you don't have what you want to do with the data. So that's really what is the most fundamental measure of data quality, what you're doing, and then is it good enough to do that?
All right, excellent. So it's got to be fit for purpose. It's got to be complete enough to allow us to measure and understand that particular indicator. And that may vary by organizations then based on what they're trying to do with it, correct?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, coming back to the famous garbage in, garbage out, right? I mean, that's why data quality is so important. I mean, most of these KPIs need to be calculated from the maintenance work orders and the data that resides in your computerized maintenance management system, right? Or the CMMS, like SAP or Maximo. So for example, if I want to understand my mean time between failures, I need to understand how many failures I had in a specific period of time. And now I can like go to like the operators or the maintenance technician and ask them, okay, how many times did a failure occur here, right? But that's not very scalable. I can't keep doing that. So I have to rely on the data that is in my maintenance management system. And that data quality plays a very important role in understanding how the metrics are calculated and also using the metrics. Like Sarah said, you know, what is my business need for the metrics? And how can I use them based on the data that I already have? And how can I improve that data?
Okay, so I have a question then. Now, if we look at most CMMSs, we have predefined fields for costs, parts, labor, skill type, activity type, all these different things. So if we have all these predefined in the CMMS, why is it that we don't have good quality data to begin with? What's preventing us from having that good quality data?
Yeah, so I think the issue is in three main areas, right? People, processes, and technology. Those are the three main drivers of the data quality not being good, or the data quality being good, you know, both aspects. So coming back to people, you know, it's data quality is primarily driven by humans, right? Because throughout the life cycle of the work order, different groups are inputting data into your CMMS. Like you have the planners, you have the technicians, you have the supervisors, you know, all putting in data into the CMMS at different points of time. But this part of their job can be viewed as an administrative burden, right? And it might be seen as, oh man, like I have to do my job here and then I have to like write all about it, right, in this system. So it just might be seen as being annoying or being as a burden. But that's just the cultural issues, right? If people don't know where the data is being used or how it is being used, they don't really see the need to put it in accurately. So that's the people part. Coming to processes, you know, we've seen many times that a well-defined process does not exist in many places, right? Like we don't know what is the step-by-step way that we are inputting data into the CMMS. That process probably doesn't exist. It's a few groups that are coming in and developing their own processes and trying to go with it their day, right? There is no governance around what is the defined process. And people may take shortcuts to circumvent certain things in that existing process. For example, you know, people might not create work orders against a piece of equipment, but they might like do it at a very higher level, like a system or a unit. So that's the process issues. And then finally, the technology, you know, people, process, and technology, the last part about technology, the CMMS might not be designed with reliability in mind, right? With the analytics of what's going on in the plant, with that in mind. So you could have fields that are not present that you need to calculate certain metrics. The codes that exist for work order types might not be very clear. There might be ambiguous codes. Even the taxonomy might be ambiguous, or the standardization might not exist between different sites for the same CMMS instance. So again, like summarizing it, it comes down to people, processes, and technology, why the data quality is not as good as it should be.
All right, excellent. Now, I know there's many organizations that have attempted to deal with some of these issues. So, you know, making sure that we have the right failure types, failure codes, we collect all this data. Such, you know, one example is ISO 14224. There's a lot of information in there on how to collect data or how to set up a data collection system for maintenance. SMRP has a bunch of guides out there around availability and metrics and all those things. If we have all these, why can't we measure these KPIs consistently or properly then? We have the standards. We have the technology that's there. What's really stopping us from doing what we need to do?
Yeah, I'll take this one. Manjish and I are well spent a lot of time with both those bodies of work. And the main challenge is that they're theoretical in nature. They're written to prescribe, you know, what the metrics are theoretically, but what's lacking is a gap between when you actually look at the data, how do you make this translation? One example, right, there's missing a lot of practical recommendations, which isn't bad. It's just a challenge moving forward into trying to, in efforts to take more ownership of data. And it kind of also relates to Manjish's earlier answer about the CMMS. It's not being designed with metrics in mind. On the flip side, a lot of maintenance and reliability metrics weren't designed with the CMMS or work management processes in mind. So there's often a gap between what the metric should be theoretically in principle and then what the data itself looks like that's generated from a work management process. So classic example that we always use is, and Manjish said it earlier, the breakdown indicator. If you want to measure MTBF for reliability metrics, you need to know what the failure events are. There's a flag in most CMMSs called breakdown indicator, and it's not well checked in the work management cycle. A more complex and key one is detection method. Detection method is a field recommended by ISO 14224, and also the concept is recommended in SMRP best practices to pretty much differentiate which corrective works are detected from proactive maintenance and which corrective work is unexpected. Well, that's very poorly captured in the CMMS, but necessary information for calculating those sorts of metrics. And I have one last example that's also related, availability, right? Availability and failure are arguments that reliability engineers can argue for a long time. You know, what is, you know, when is it available and when is it unavailable? But that's just a definition. If you don't have a standard defined way of defining the dates in work management, you know, when did the asset go down? When was it fixed? You're never going to be able to consistently evaluate availability. So it's looking at the actual data and seeing what it can do.
All right, excellent. So it is there's an issue between the theoretical and the practical application is what we're getting to with these standards, right? It's easy to say this is what you should do, this is how you should set it up. But actually getting that into the CMMS, recording it is a very, very different problem.
Right. And it's not, I'm saying it's not bad. It's just a channel. It's not bad on the ice. Not trying to knock SMRP or ISO 14224. It's just a new challenge.
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, I've heard it many, many times, but that soft stuff is the hard stuff, right? Getting people to follow those, setting up the CMMS properly. All those things are, you know, related to the people and process. And sometimes that's the more difficult part, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's baby steps, right? I mean, it's a journey that you take, and we keep making incremental improvements.
Right. Excellent. Now, how can organizations link the KPIs with specific data from the CMMS? How do we set this up in a way that's going to give us a consistent, repeatable measurement, making sure we got the right data behind it? How do we do that?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, before we start with the KPIs, it's important to first determine which KPIs are important, right? Because there are about 70 or 80 KPIs or even more than that, right? Like if you look at the SMRP standard, there are a lot of KPIs. So it's really important to first align your KPIs with your business goals. And that's where the organizations can think about, okay, what is more important to me? Do I need to be saving more money? Do I need less frequency, or I need to be less reactive? And that's when, you know, people can start linking, okay, that's my goal, so these are the KPIs I need to measure. So for example, if I'm calculating mean time to repair, you know, I need to understand, okay, when did the failure occur, when the maintenance completed, and when the equipment was back in service, right? So for that particular metric, I need to understand all these different fields in my CMMS. And you know, basically once I've linked my business goals to my KPIs, the second step would be to identify these required CMMS fields and then start understanding what is the data quality for these fields.
During these uncertain times, Iridicio is here to provide support. We have set up a special page for you to access exclusive resources such as webinars, templates, and office hours where you can ask our staff any questions that you may have. We are focusing these practical resources to help maintenance and reliability practitioners that are working from home or can carve out a little bit of time during this COVID crisis to pick a project and implement best practices. Find out more at help.iridicio.com. All right, excellent. So once we understand that and we have an understanding of our current state, what can organizations do to overcome those data quality issues? You know, we recognize we have an issue with the breakdown indicator or recording the specific time that the asset went down. How do we overcome that? How do we improve the data quality?
Yeah, so there are two parts here, right? One is to improve the historical data. So that's the data that we already have in our system. So we do need to go back and understand what kinds of failures occurred. So improve the historical data. And Sarah, you have much more to say on that. So I'll just turn it over to you to talk about the historical data improvements.
Yeah, in respect to historical data, right, just think fundamentally, companies are spending so much money to create and store all the CMMS data. It should be, you know, you should be unable to get the full potential. However, there's a lot of challenges that we all see. There's a lot of missing codes, inconsistent codes, galore. One thing that I've noticed in general that we found is that there's a lot of information buried there that's underutilized in the form of free text description fields, where someone filled in all the checkboxes and dropdowns and then wrote a description that really said what was happening and what the work done was. But you need a way of systematically extracting this information in a scalable way, which is where analytics can come in. So one field of analytics called natural language processing, or NLP, is the field concerned with actually programming computers and algorithms to process and analyze large amounts of natural language data, which is the descriptions. How do I handle hundreds and thousands of pump will not pump in varieties of spellings, seal leak in varieties of spellings, and do it in a scalable, consistent way? And a lot of the approaches that have been developed in NLP can be applied to extract information in these cases where we have missing, incomplete, inconsistent data. So one example that we've worked with extensively, and I'll keep coming back to, is the breakdown indicator. We can use a lot of descriptions on corrective work events to really determine which events were failure events and which were not, and then use that data to calculate metrics. Further, we can further refine these by looking at we can start looking at failures by different maintainable items or components that may be found in the text, or different failure characteristics. So I can start looking, instead of seeing what the MTBF is on my centrifugal pumps, I can start to also look at, well, what's it for seal leaks versus impeller failures, for example. So I just want to bring that up and say, one thing that Manjish and I have, and our team has always said, is that everyone always has bad data, but on the flip side, you also always have good data. And one thing I've noticed is that the unstructured free text fields can be viewed as both. If you don't know what to do with them, it's bad data. But in this day and age, with a lot of technologies that are around, you can leverage it and it becomes good data because you have rich information about your historical data. And you can use this to for calculating reliability metrics in consistent ways across the fleet.
All right, excellent. Now, using that natural language programming, right?
NLP, you say NLP.
All right, NLP. All right, using that, we can extract the data from the descriptions to further enhance and refine and clean up our historical data. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions I get often is it worth going back in time to clean up that data, or is it better off just to start new at this point moving forward?
Well, that's great, because that also links to the other side of our path for cleaning up data, right? We by no means say, let's do everything the way we've been doing and start using magic analytics. This is great to be able to use the data that we've already collected, but Manjeesh will talk a little bit about moving forward. But in terms of going back and cleaning up the historical data, is it worth it? I always say, and this is my wishy-washy answer, it always depends. It depends on how expensive is it worth and are you going to get value out of it. But fundamentally, I believe it's worth it. Maybe not to go back 100 years or 20 years in your data, but, at least in this past decade or in the past 5 years. And fundamentally, I said this earlier, and I'll say it again, organizations are spending a ton of money creating and storing this data. They should be unlocking it to get value.
Yeah, I agree that there is a worthwhile approach to go back and clean up some of that data. Now, one of the things I've said in the past is, like you go back a certain amount of time, but also depending on what the business need is and the business driver, focusing on a particular type of asset or classes of assets or specific processes or lines. That way we're not trying to clean up everything at once. We're focused on what's going to give us the greatest return. Because sometimes cleaning up that old data may not be worth it.
Yeah, and there's also a little rabbit hole there, and determining the asset might also help determine time window, since some assets don't get touched very often and some get touched every week.
Absolutely. So that was one possible solution, is going back and cleaning up the existing data. What do we do for the data moving forward then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the second parallel path, I would say, right, is to improve the future data quality. And the way to do that is implementing the best practices that we have in data quality, like in our processes, people, and technology, right? Those are, again, like the three things that I keep coming back to. But let me give you some examples, right? So the way we can improve our data quality by implementing best practices in the people area or the human area is, we can first have a good training session where we can show people, okay, this is how the data is being used, right? For a reliability engineer to do his job properly and identify bad actors or identify assets that are problems, and assets that we need to focus on from a reliability standpoint, he needs to have good data, right? And good data comes only when all the people touching the work order make great comments and make sure that all the fields are filled out and they put the work order against the right piece of equipment. So that's where, like, showing them the metrics and showing them the end result and how it impacts their job. So for example, if we have the same kind of failure over and over again and the maintenance technician has to go out and keep fixing the same kind of problem, if the reliability engineer can identify the root cause with the information that's captured in the CMMS, they can actually put a reliability improvement in place, whatever it is, right? Like changing the strategy or designing the equipment in a way that failure does not occur again. That has a big impact on the maintenance technician, right? Where he doesn't have to go out and keep doing the same thing over and over again. So having that training and having that awareness will really improve the data quality from the people standpoint, right? Now, from processes, we need to put in a standardized process in place. So there has to be a governance around that process, and there has to be standardized definitions for all the maintenance terms, and also give some specific examples on how to put in certain maintenance scenarios in the CMMS, right? So for example, what is called a failure? What is the definition of a failure? what is a repair, what is a PM. Like having standardized definitions around these different codes that you have in the CMMS really make it easy for the planners and the maintenance technicians to select the right code and do it in a uniform way each and every time across the different sites. And then finally, coming to technology, we have to design the CMMS with the KPIs in mind, right? So we have to have all the required fields, like Sarah was saying, breakdown indicators, priority, cost, dates, you know, having all these fields in their place. And then the pick list that you have in the CMMS should be specific enough where people don't have an issue selecting or trying to find the right value in that pick list. So I think, again, by improving the people, processes, and technology aspect, we can really start improving the future data quality by putting in the right work processes in place.
All right, excellent. Now, are there other sources of data that we can use to supplement or automate some of this, whether it's going back and cleaning up data retroactively or focusing on people, processes, and technology moving forward? For example, can we leverage a manufacturing execution system to understand when assets go down and come back up? Can we leverage that type of stuff to help with this?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, we should. We should have all this information linked in one place to do analysis. And I think a good example with the MES example is if you're doing process analysis and you have equipment going down and you want to do a root cause of the problem, your equipment could be going down for maintenance and reliability issues, in which case you're going to want information from the CMMS. But it could also be process issues, which may come from other data sources than the CMMS. So having that complete picture will help do the analysis. It may also help identify what variables are in common that just looking at the CMMS or just looking at the MES or, say, even just looking at, you know, process data alone won't tell you.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that we're trying to pull in and integrate this data from these other systems, because the CMMS is one part. It doesn't give us the whole picture all the time. The MES might be part of it. The MRP might be another part. There's all these different systems that tie together.
Right. And it's challenging. So I would say, from my experience, one key thing to consider to start there is standardization across an organization. I mean, even within a company or a site, who's handling the MES and who's handling the CMMS could vary.
Yeah, it might be a bit of a nightmare to try to join all those data sources together, right? If that standardization is not in place. Like even like we have seen, like the equipment, the way it's called in one system might be different from what it's called in another system. So trying to join that data together and getting insights out of it and analytics out of it, it's really important to have that standardization in place.
Absolutely. Now, what would you tell those that are looking to improve their current metrics, their current data quality? Where do they start down this journey?
Absolutely. And I think the first thing I would like to say is, you know, it's a journey. Like you said, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? And we should not get overwhelmed by these issues and these data quality constraints that we have around our CMMS. Like one example I'll give you is I had talked to one of our customers, and they were very excited to get started on this journey. But that initial, like, you know, what we know in physics as the static friction, you know, is too high in this process. So they got discouraged out of it, and they said, okay, we'll tackle it next year. That's the one thing you don't want to do, right? Now, what you should do is first measure your data quality, right? And identify the good data versus bad data, because I can guarantee you that you have good data in some places, and you can start using that already to, you know, identify your bad actors and calculate these metrics. But the areas where you have the data that is not so good and needs improvement, you can start understanding, you know, what are the different places? Like, is the data not complete? Is it not accurately captured? And then coming back to the best practices that we talked about, start implementing those and for the future data, and then all the NLP algorithms that Sarah was mentioning, start implementing those for the historical data. So that's like the first step is measuring the data and then chasing after these different avenues that you have in front of you. But take that first step. Don't wait to take that first step because data will never get perfect.
And I think that, you know, there's two things there you mentioned. One, take the first step, right? There's that saying, when was the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the next best time? Today. So we got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. So just start now. Understand your current state. Understand where the gaps are. Understand where you're going to get that return on investment and go from there. You know, we just have to start. I think that's most important. Now, what do you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with data quality? Is it that unique combination of people, processes, and technologies? Is it having a governance process? Is it having a champion? You know, what is the what's the key ingredient to success there?
I think the biggest thing is the mindset, right? Because like once you have that mindset that you are going to take the step and this is a problem that you are going to solve, these things will come to you, right? Like the people, process, and technology, what needs to be improved. But it's just the mindset. Like in many cases, what we have seen is that people are not in that mindset, right? This is an optional thing, which sometimes is baffling. Or they see it as something that can be a crutch, right? And they don't want to address it right away. Like you said, they don't that first step that you have to take is always the problem. But it's all in the mind, right? Like if we have the right mindset and if we decide to go and take these steps, then we can start implementing all the things that we discussed today.
All right, excellent. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today? Is it to take that first step? Is it to start thinking about what is actually holding us back from a data quality standpoint? Why is it important to us? Where do they start? What's that one thing to take away from?
Absolutely. So one thing is don't get overwhelmed and don't procrastinate that we talked about. And the other thing is, you know, like if you look around you, there are so many organizations that are in the same exact boat as you. I haven't met a single person in the maintenance and reliability world who has told me that his data is perfect, right? Everybody has these challenges. So we just have to rise up to the challenge, right? And the way we do that is we change the culture. So we start with a nice step-by-step framework that we talked about today. So first start with tying your metrics with your business goals. Right. So if I have a goal of I need to reduce my unplanned work, okay, then I need these metrics. Then go to your CMMS and see what are the fields that are required. Then measure the data quality and see whether the data quality is good for those fields. And if there are improvements, what can you do to improve? Right. Which are the NLP algorithms that you can put in place? Can you put in place some best practices to improve that part? And then the most important part is sustain those data quality improvements by monitoring and tracking, right? So keep monitoring and tracking just to make sure that you're doing well. So it's really a step-by-step process. And it's just a matter of taking that first step and the rest will follow.
Yeah. And just to make a comment about not being intimidated. Also, I think that NLP or fancy analytic methods, towards machine learning can be intimidating. I also say don't be intimidated by that either. You can still start small. For example, I'm sure your reliability engineer maintenance person knows what chronic failures are causing money. That's a great place to start. You can just say, so I know, for instance, seal failures on pumps is always a good example. You can just do a search word query in your CMMS or your APM software for the word seal and track how long that's happening on corrective work and how much it's costing. And you're doing something really rudimentary while taking advantage of your free text. So you can start small and get value there as well. You don't need to be intimidated.
All right. Excellent. So some great words of wisdom on where we start with data quality, how we manage data quality, both retroactively and more proactively in the future. Now, you guys have shared a wealth of great information. Where can people find out more about you guys? What events or activities or white papers, what do you have available?
Well, Manjish and I are both on LinkedIn, which, right, it's a hot spot for maintenance and reliability enthusiasts. We're also on the SMRP message board, which is another hot spot for enthusiasts. In terms of writing, we've been writing papers and articles for conferences. Some of the key ones is we rinse papers for the SMRP annual conference, the PHM, which is the Prognostics and Health Management Society, which is awesome because all their papers are open source. And I believe that there's links to everything off of our LinkedIn pages, or there will be in the next hour.
All right. Excellent. Well, I'll make sure to put links to your LinkedIn profile, some of these great resources that you mentioned as well. So the PHM piece, you know, being able to see those, especially if they're open source, I think would be a great insight to a lot of our listeners. Now, lastly, before we depart, what's your favorite resource? Is it a particular book? Is it a standard? What's your favorite resource for this topic to help people move forward?
Yeah, so I really like Ramesh Gulati's book a lot. I think it has, I think it's called Maintenance and Reliability Best Practices. I really like that book a lot. It has a lot of, like, from the basics to the advanced, like all the aspects of reliability engineering are in there. And we are also big fans of the SMRP best practice guidelines. And we are really seeing a gap in terms of like the data quality improvement. So that's why, you know, we are also thinking of writing a book about it to go with the step-by-step approach that we mentioned today.
All right. Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today, share your insights and resources around this topic. It is a very relevant topic, whether it's data quality with KPIs. I see a lot of conversations around asset data quality, material item or material master data quality. Data quality is an issue that's plaguing us in all different aspects. So while we talk about KPIs here, a lot of the tools and techniques you guys mentioned, I feel can be applied with asset data or material data and so on and so forth. So thank you for sharing your time and wisdom with us today.
No, thanks for having us. This was really great.
Yeah.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.